Hey, deep fried fans. Have you ever had a deep fried cheeseburger? I swear I'm not making this stuff up. They are a staple of some state fairs in the country. So the next time you're at one, see if you can find a deep fried cheeseburger. This is Ellie Mae to announce show number 25 with special guest Michael Leeworthy. Michael Leeworthy is a senior product manager within the Windows Server division for Windows Server 2008. He has 7 years of experience at Microsoft, and this has enabled him to spend time equally between infrastructure and developer solutions. This has provided a solid understanding of the needs of developers, knowledge workers, and IT professionals in organizations of all sizes. Michael attended the University of South Australia, where he studied both electrical engineering and computer science. Okay, deep fried fans, sit back, relax, and get ready for some Gumpology.
Welcome to another episode of Deep Fried Bites. We're sitting here live on the PDC Expo floor. My main man, Woody, how are you, sir?
Good. A little tired. Last day of PDC, but you know what? Excitement is still going strong.
It is, man. We had some great, you know, parties last night that we went to. You know, the ISV guys did a really great job with the After Dark party. I thought it was very, very classy, man.
You know what? I think it was probably the best party I've ever been to.
Yeah, it was very, very classy.
Yeah, good food. There were really old time video games.
Like Galaga was in there.
Galaga.
They had all this, all these arcade things. They had like these tents, and you could have all those chairs. You could sit out.
Bungalows that you could sit in. Yeah, it was just a great
Rock
night.
Band
so
and
we have to give them all their props for all that.
So, folks, today we're sitting down with Michael Leeworthy, and he's a senior product manager with Windows Server 2008. Michael, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much.
Awesome. So today we're going to sit down and talk to Michael about the R2 release for Server 2008. And I hear that you know a lot about it.
Yeah. I've been working with the R2 product for probably a little over a year now. And we started developing it, grabbing the requirements of it, looking at how we're going to sort of evolve the Windows Server 08 product as we know today. So yeah, had some time with it.
Now, we just got it, though, and we're already, you said like a year you've been doing this whole R2 thing. I mean, is it to like merge all of the stuff that we're hearing at PDC, like the support Oslo and Dublin type of stuff and all of that, or what?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the way we think like this, like we get the biggest question we get asked is why is it called R2? Why isn't it not called Windows 7 Server? And you know, basically what actually is it? And I think the easiest way to think about the R2 release is it's an update release. So it's, you know, taking, you know, the base core Windows Server 08 product and really extending some of the features and functionality with the latest technology and providing that base platform for the next generation of services, the Azure, the Dublins, you know, the next generation of web applications that people are building out there.
So it's going to have the same kernel as Windows 7, or they're going to go that route?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do share kernels. So things like application compatibility and driver sets will be common across those. Of course, we sort of branch off, you know, one being a client-focused release and one being a server-focused release. So we do have some branch off, you know, in the subkernel space. But generally, the kernel is shared between the two systems.
Okay, so when this comes out, are you going to push it out as a service pack or what? I mean,
no, we'll actually push it out as a product. So, you know, we've had a history with the R2 name when we had Windows Server 2003, and then 2 years later we introduced Windows Server 2003 R2, and effectively that was a server upgrade. And it's what we call an update release. So it's a service pack to us is sort of enhancing existing features and functionality, like doing bug fixes, performance checks, maybe adding a little bit of functionality to the existing features. An update release is that also, but all about creating new focuses and new features, sort of new technology. It's not a full release for us, because usually a full release in the server world means a kernel change when we have to go through application compatibility testing, a lot of driver certification. So, you know, a lot of that's going to come across. So it's effectively a point release for us, which is why we call it an R2 release.
Okay, so R2 is going to be the actual name of it. So if somebody says, you know, do you have Server 2008 R2, that's going to mean you have these features?
Absolutely.
Okay. So it's not going to be, it's not a code name or anything like that.
No, we're called Windows Server 7 internally for a little while, and that leaked out on blogs and all that, as we all do. but we officially named it a little while ago, and this week we sort of announced that name, and customers are comfortable with that.
So the hard drives that we all got here at PDC, is there any bits on there for R2?
Yeah, absolutely. So you get the Windows Server 2008 R2 M3 bits. So that's the pre-beta. You know, we expect to go beta by the, you know, later this year, early next year. We're trying to get it in the hands of, you know, all of our developers and our IT pros as quick as possible. But the M3 bits are on everyone's hard drive.
That's cool. You know, what do you guys do to actually, build a server OS? I mean, tell us some stories how do you do this thing?
So it starts with customers. And effectively what we do is, as we're actually developing the previous product, so as we're developing Windows Server 2008, we're actually looking forward to R2 as well. And, we understand that, we have certain dev cycles that we can build features and functionality to, but we go out to our early customers. We have this thing called the TAP, the Technology Adoption Program. It's just a bunch of customers around the world. And for R2, we have over 100 of these customers around the world. And a lot of our product team go out and sit with these customers and actually do use cases. How do they use a server? Where are their barriers? Where are their challenges? How are they supporting both IT infrastructure, but also how are they supporting sort of the applications in their world? And what changes do we need for the operating system to make that a lot easier? So from a core infrastructure point of view, we do a lot of that. We also then look at the dev world very, very heavily. Around web development and around normal client development, and look at how these guys are utilizing the platform, what services and requirements they need in the platform, and how we need to support that. And this drives a lot of the changes in application compatibility, the changes in managed code support, changes also in things like the IIS platform. And then that usually happens between about 18 months to 2 years out from releasing a beta. We take about 6 months or so to define the system requirements, do all the use case studies, do all the personas. We go out and do panel testing. We do a lot of panel testing. And then we actually start, devving the product. We take the code kernel as it is today with the client guys, and we sort of branch off and we start developing it. We go out to our TAP guys. We show them the features and functionality. They report back on it. And we sort of tighten the product up to a beta. And then when we release it to the public, we then get, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of feature requests and requests in existing features. And I tell you what, in the last release, we actually changed features and functionality through the community feedback during the beta process. So that's why the beta process is so important to us this time around.
Yeah, it sounds like you guys are really, really out there. It sounds like everything is driven from the client, the customer.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Yeah, absolutely. Good. It's a huge focus for the Windows Server in the Windows Server space because, it is a highly competitive world now in the server space, and, we have to ensure that we keep raising that bar, and the only way we raise that bar is keep meeting the needs and exceeding the needs of all the guys out there, both the IT pros but also the developers as well.
So from a developer standpoint, what's the cool features that developers can get with R2?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple that are just really key for developers. IIS is incredibly important for, any web application out there. And, we've taken the IIS 7 product, which I think is, a phenomenal release in the 08 product. And we've really extended it. We up on IIS.net, we release all these community-driven extensions, things like the URL redirector and a number of others. And what we're doing with the R2 release is we're taking those core extensions that we've built and we're building over the next 6 or so months, and we'll roll them into the IIS product as features themselves. We'll also make it a lot more extensible in the sense that if you're using community to create new extensions, they'll be easy to roll into the server and deploy across your organization. We've done some really good things about sandboxing security to really push IIS security more and more. I think we have a highly secure environment now, but we always just like keep pushing that envelope. And there's some really other good things. There's really some more good things about the new web deployment toolkit. So this is a new kit which you can take your entire web application and all the configurations and settings you need to run that application on Windows Server 08. And effectively, it's a point and click. So you send it off to a server and it deploys on the server. So this is good for custom developers, but it's great for ISVs who can actually create packages for our customers and then just push that information out there.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. How does, because that's I work in a large enterprise, basically, and we deal with test beta prod and all that kind of stuff. So how does a developer do that and package it and all that kind of stuff?
So effectively what they do is when they get to the end of their development process with their web application, they'll either use, you know, their own experience or tools such as Visual Studio Team System to just sort of define the settings required to run that application. What settings do I need in IIS? What settings do I need from a shared configuration point of view? Even what operating systems settings do I need? Do I need IIS installed? Do I need, this turned on? Do I need that turned off? And effectively, it will do a state of all those settings for us, put that in the package, and then be able to deploy that out. Of course, you need rights and permissions and all that type of stuff to deploy. But it just makes it a lot easier for our IT pro friends out there to just point a package at a server, and it just goes and configures that IIS server. And then you can get in some really funky things if you think about it. You can go, all right, well, if I've got a web application that can do load balancing, I can automate that through PowerShell or through some scripting. So if I have this, my web application, it's being hammered, 85, 90% utilized, I can use some of the scripting technology in Windows Server 08 to start up a new IIS VHD, deploy this package and install this package, and then start load balancing that application. And that can happen at 3 in the morning when I'm on the beach in Hawaii drinking Mai Tais.
Oh, that's very cool. So what's the story around virtualization with R2? Is there any new features in that area?
Absolutely. I think that the coolest feature for virtualization R2 is live migration. And to just give an example of where we are today, in Windows Server 08, if you look at, say, clustering, you have a two-node cluster. If you have your virtual machine running on node 1, and you fail that over to node 2, what happens is there's a pause in the user experience who's using that, whether it's a client, whether it's a server, and that experience could be anything from the screen will just sort of pause, or you'll get a little timeout box, and that could take anywhere from 30 seconds to a couple of minutes depending on the size of that virtual machine that you're moving across. With live migration, when you move, you fail over or move, migrate from node 1 to node 2, the user experience isn't affected at all. So they can still use that environment, that image, that application, why that migration is happening. So this is going to make moving of virtual machines from server to server based on utilization or failover just seamless to the end user.
Nice, very nice.
And the great thing about that is that the developers, they get that inherently. So when they, if they develop their applications and for Windows Server 2008, and as long as they're certified or works within the 08 family, they'll just inherit that live migration technology, and they won't have to worry about, the clustering features or all the virtualization features. They just basically get it as part of the package.
I saw some stuff earlier, but I'm not really sure what it is, but it was, I think it was called Direct Access.
Right? Oh, yeah, Direct Access. I think Direct Access is just the best feature of Windows Server 08. So let me give you an example of Direct Access. Many of us use Outlook today and Outlook 2007, and we use this RPC of a HTTP, and it just makes our life so much easier. We sit here at PDC, we open our Outlook up, and it just syncs with the server. We don't have to worry about VPNs and all that type of stuff. It just happens seamlessly. With Direct Access, that experience is now spread to the rest of our functions and features out there. So if you look at an internal website, a file share, an application, a web application, at the moment, if someone sends me a link to a document, I have to VPN in, so I have to open my VPN client and go through the authentication process and all the security checks that happen with VPNs. And then, after about a minute or so of that, I can then get to that document. With Direct Access, I basically click on the link of the document. My computer realizes that I'm offline, and I actually invoke a Direct Access connection to my organization and open that document up. I mean, it still uses VPN technology, but uses seamless VPN technology that as a user, it just happens in front of me exactly the way Outlook happens. And that's a really, phenomenal feature.
Let's say I run Cisco VPN client, and I have typed the PIN and the RSA token. What's the experience, with that? So
the great thing about that is we're actually partnering with lots of our VPN partners out there.
Okay.
And Cisco's a great example of this. So they'll actually take this technology and expand it and utilize it as well as some of their solutions. So, if you've made an investment in Cisco VPN technology, there's going to be a great partnering solution there. And you'll still require VPNs for some things. There's certain applications that won't work via Direct Access, or there's certain environments that you'll want a VPN in for greater control, of that experience. But, for surfing or, putting my expenses in for PDC, I can now just open the expense form and just whack my expenses in and scare the hell out of my boss.
Oh. Yeah. I bet you this week is the expenses for Microsoft will be amazing. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think one of the great things about Direct Access is also that, you know, it's a tool enabled for developers as well. So it's not just accessing, you know, SharePoint and websites and file shares. You know, we're going to make this available for our developer community. So, you know, fat applications, you know, I've got a CRM or a sales tool or operations tool or, you know, any type of application that at this stage requires me to VPN in, you know, into my organization, you know, Direct Access can possibly, you know, provide me that seamless experience. So, you know, it's very exciting both for just, you know, normal, you know, users like us that are accessing internal, you know, internal documents and resources, but really exciting for sort of the ISVs and developers of the world that are going to be maybe using this technology moving forward.
How does it actually work under the hood?
So effectively, it utilizes a Direct Access client, which is inherent in Windows 7 client. So it's a Win 7 client technology. What happens is we have a number of ways to invoke a VPN to a Direct Access service. So we have a Direct Access service living in the DMZ, and that's a gateway service, similar to like a terminal services gateway or an ISA server or similar. And effectively what happens is that client, you know, takes care of all the authentication, the tunneling, the protocol for me, and then that, you know, that Direct Access gateway proxies my request back and forth into my organization. So, you know, I've got an incredible amount of encryption and security from the client to the server, but also great security from my server to my internal applications as well.
So I have to ask, are you guys going to bring that back to Vista or XP at all?
At this stage, that's not the plan. That we require some of the functionality that Windows 7 client provides. So you know, it's definitely a Win 7 client focus.
Another feature to push up to Windows 7, which we have just tons of excitement here around that. So with the this new initiative to be more green in the world, how is Microsoft helping out the server and their enterprise clients with power management?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, one of the big things that we're just seeing is that increasing pressure to make our servers just run more green. And, you know, we've been working really, really hard with our hardware OEMs out there to really come up with a great solution. I think one of the things that we're seeing here with Windows Server 2008 is just the principle that we can now adjust the CPU cycles and the core cycles of the machine. So we can park CPUs and cores based on the threads at that time. So, for example, if you have an 8-core machine and, you know, you have threads running over those 8 cores, the OS will actually determine how many cores you require at that time to run your application, whether it's, you know, a Microsoft application, third-party application. It will actually compress those down to the least it can, and then park the rest of those cores. So it might be the fact that you have an 8-core machine that only 2 cores are actually running, and the other 6 cores are in a very low power state. You know, we're finding that this is just dramatically reducing cooling costs, you know, electricity to run those. And we're going to, you know, we'll see this extend more and more into other peripherals, you know, other technology on the Windows Server platform. And the great thing about this is it's inherent in the Windows Server 2008 R2 platform. So as a developer, I don't really have to worry about that. I don't have to develop any new APIs. I don't have to do any new threading development in my custom application. I just get it as part of, you know, deploying on a Windows Server 08 product.
R2 is green.
Yes. R2 is very green. So we heard a rumor about you that you're actually an old-time developer and you came from other places in Microsoft. Can you give a little bit of history about yourself?
For sure, yeah. It's quite funny. So I'm sitting over here on the Windows Server R2 booth, which is quite foreign in a PDC. You know, it's sort of having an infrastructure booth at a developer conference, and I'm looking at all my Visual Studio Team System friends that are actually being quite rude to me across the hallway, showing me little signals.
Flashing signs.
Exactly. So I actually, so from the accent, you probably heard that I came from Australia, and I actually came over to the US to work on a technology called the Microsoft Business Framework.
I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah. I worked on it for a little while before it was sort of evolved into this thing called Project Green, and then that sort of became a bit of Oslo and a bit of Entity Frameworks, and it sort of spread across. It was phenomenal technology to work on at that stage as part of the dynamics. But the great thing about that is it enabled me to get into the Visual Studio Team System team. So I was part of the team that really helped sort of drive the end goals of that product and then get it out to market as well. So the Visual Studio 2005 family.
What part of TFS did you, or team system did you work on?
So I actually worked on, I'm probably the least exciting one, which was the developer edition. You know, we had the architect division, and we had the testing division, and we had team foundation server, and these were, you know, these were sort of the glamour, the glamour ones, and you know, we're all talking about these, and I was quite happy working on the developer edition, because I think some of the core functions and features that we were building that developer edition, that, you know, that team edition for developers, was really just pushing, you know, enterprise development and mid-market development right to the limit of what we could at that stage.
Well, yeah, I think the developer edition was, I mean, I think everything kind of sits around the developer edition and feeds off of everything that comes out of that.
Yeah, it's pretty much like the sort of like the hub and spoke, you know. I mean, it's
for sure. It was definitely, and it was definitely. But in a team, I was definitely the ersatz guy, right? I was, you know, the developer edition guy. But the great thing about it, I was really happy to go out and, you know, just talk to core C++ developers, and, you know, we had so many guys on unmanaged code at that time, and really just going, well, how are you helping me? What are we doing in the new? Because, you know, ever at that stage, we're going, you're all focused on managed code. I'm like, well, and I think the developer edition showed that we really still loved our good C and C++ and unmanaged code developers out there.
So outside of R2, what is exciting you the most about all the news coming out of PDC this week?
So Visual Studio 2010, sitting down with some of the program managers yesterday, looking at 2010 and looking at features that we whiteboarded back in 2003 and 2004, and actually seeing them and seeing the advance and evolution of the architect modeling tool. You know, it's one of those tools where it had so much potential in 2005, and I think, you know, that we delivered an okay modeling environment, but I think in 2010, I mean, just that modeling environment is just beautiful. So I think that's one of the most, from a tools perspective, that's really, really exciting me, and makes me wish that I was back in the developer team. But Azure is definitely the thing that is blowing me away at PDC. I mean, I knew about it from an OS point of view, and my team has been working on the Azure from a Windows Server side, but seeing it all together and seeing some of these partners show some real life scenarios, it's just sort of really made me excited about sort of cloud services and how the Windows technology and the services and platforms technology is going to support that in the future.
Do you have to deal with the Azure team much at all? Or?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So, you know, we're quite linked because, you know, there's an operating system component of the Azure solutions. So, we V-team and orchestrate across this very, very well. I mean, they have definitely the development architecture team focusing on building those solutions for them, and then they utilize our teams to sort of help, you know, define new features and functionality they need in our core product to sort of support them.
So is there any pieces in R2 to deal with the cloud? I mean, if I have some servers that sit in my own space as a company, is there any features to allow that to interact with the cloud better than in the past?
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, so, you know, from the basic, from, you know, WCF support, you know, is dev, you know, and WS support. I mean, they're sort of the core features in dealing with the cloud and the whole cloud computing. Also, you know, integrating the live services and live net and the way that we're basically, you know, live mesh and the way that we're integrating that into the Windows Server 08 product. You know, these are the sort of the entry pieces to starting in the cloud computing. And then some of the new technologies that sort of SQL provides us as the back end for that. You know, there are definitely a lot of like core functions that Windows Server 08 and R2 sort of provide you now for that entry level to the cloud services. And as we move on, you'll start seeing a lot more focus in that space, you know, from, you know, how do we use your current technology and how do you take advantage of the Azure technology.
You know, back in episode 8, we interviewed some guys that actually run the Microsoft.com domain and all of that stuff. And one of the really cool stories that we got out of that show was that there's a lot of dog fooding going on at, you know, like on the actual domains there. And they're like, you know, we get, you know, like crazy betas, and we start putting these servers under load way before our clients ever get them. Where are you at, you know, in that process? Are they running R2 in production right now? I mean, behind the scenes, sort of stressing it and doing that now with it?
So I do know that MS Com are looking at some of the R2 features and functionality now. So generally, as we move forward to M3 becomes, you know, the sort of the stable release for us to really start testing it in a sort of real life production environment. So we'll start seeing a lot of our internal core services actually start moving to Windows Server 2008 R2. From my team, we're actually running R2 to support my own internal team's tools. I mean, but they're fairly basic tools. You know, there's some web applications and team applications. But, you know, I expect, you know, post-PDC and also post-WinHack and IT Forum happening next week, that we'll actually have a lot of, you know, internal functions moving forward to R2. We're quite a large company. I think we have about 90,000-odd employees across the world. So we're quite a good dog-fooding environment ourselves. And most of those employees are really keen to get onto new technology, so they don't mind, you know, getting onto the beta technology and really stress testing it. But I mean, it's a great example. MS Com is definitely one of the, you know, the bleeding edge organizations, you know, in Microsoft that take beta technology and push it up there in the public realm and to really understand how it works. And I think the Microsoft website is probably in one of the like top 10 websites of the world and hits. So we definitely get a lot of traffic there, and they definitely drive a lot of that you know, scalability and reliability story for us.
So one area we haven't hit on is security. So are there new security features and ways to keep DOS attacks from happening? And I mean, what type of experience with R2 did you guys try to do on the security side of things?
Yeah, for sure. So we've tried to just enhance the security that we've delivered in Windows Server 08, because we delivered, I think, a fairly secure platform in Windows Server 08, you know, definitely around not only securing the IT infrastructure, but providing a lot of application security. And that was some of the technology we inherited off Vista as well, you know, with, you know, the data execution and also with the user access control. And we've really tried to look at what we're doing in Windows 7 around security and enhance that as well. And then take that extension into the server world. So things like, you know, enhanced sandbox security for IIS. So, you know, things like enhanced sandbox support for IIS. We've also looked at just core security for our servers. We introduced this thing called the read-only domain controller in Windows Server 2008, which actually is an identity identity management server or Active Directory server that doesn't store passwords. And the great thing about this is you can stick it at a branch, and branch offices sometimes are in the middle of nowhere. The server's sitting under the admin's desk or somebody's desk, and they're unsecured. And generally, if you're a naughty person, you could grab that server, reverse engineer it, pull people's passwords out, all that type of stuff. So by doing a read-only domain control that didn't support store passwords, we secure that environment a lot better. And then with BitLocker, you can then encrypt it. But now with Windows 7, we get things like BitLocker for remote drives, BitLocker for backup tape. So you know you've got this common encryption platform for that. We've also extended the security in things like Active Directory and identity management. We've extended the security in things like server core. So the branch office environment becomes a lot more secure. We have this great new technology called branch caching, which sort of is that whole need, takes the whole need away from having to store documents, you know, maybe confidential and IP documents on a local unsecured branch environment. We can cache that down there. And the great thing about that is at any one time, we can pull that cache. So if there's going to be, you know, if we feel there's going to be a leak, a sensitivity leak, we can actually say, all right, well, just let's pull that cache. So that way there's not a copy of that document living on a local server within that branch. But, you know, the flip side of that is you get a huge amount of productivity gains in caching, you know, documents locally and with branch caching. And we also support this peer-to-peer caching now, which is actually quite cool in that environment as well, which is the whole concept that if I have a shared folder on my desktop and I have a copy of that document in my shared folder and my colleague from across the way needs it, he can make a call to the server. The server will actually tell him there's a local copy on my workstation.
Oh, that's a very cool feature.
Yeah, that's a great feature. Nice. I mean, there's some administration security things you need to work out as an organization for that. But, you know, if I'm sharing documents, it's a great way. Well, why go over the WAN when I can actually just go over the local LAN? And if that document's freely available with my protocols and my security access, absolutely.
And that's in R2?
That's in R2, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
is that a Windows 7 only on the client side?
You know, I'm sorry to say I don't know. I'd have to find out about that. I actually don't know.
You stumped him. You stumped,
stumped him.
Good job, Woody. Wow, you stumped
the
him.
The first
good.
Person I've stumped at PDC. So.
I don't know.
But that's okay. I mean, there's so much stuff coming out this week that...
It's okay. You can't know everything, Michael.
You can't know everything. You, Microsoft
you're doing,
people are
you're
smart.
You're doing great, but you can't know everything.
Exactly. That's what my mom keeps telling me.
So, for all the people that are going to get the M3 version of R2 and you start using it, how can they get feedback back to you guys?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we actually have a new website called microsoft.com/Windows Server 2008 R2. And on that, we not only have sort of all the new documentation that we're providing, but also a feedback mechanism. At this stage, the feedback mechanism is just through a forum. But, you know, the great thing about that is we have a good amount of community exposure to that. And then moving forward, we'll actually start having public RDPs and public beta forums as well. So, you know, we'll have feedback forums and support forums. And we're even playing with the idea of creating a community forum around R2 specifically that sort of links developers and IT pros and trainers together. So we can get a lot of communication, a lot of training happening really early on without having any drag of, you know, maybe something's not available. We can get a trainer in there that these guys are usually, first out of the gates and understanding our product. We can actually get them into the community really, really early on before, you know, needing to wait for official Microsoft curriculum.
All right. So it's time for me to beat you up now. Okay. So as a developer, you're a developer. Right, and so are we, and a lot of our listeners are as well. We like to run Server 2008 on the metal and develop on that platform, okay? And up until about 3 weeks ago, I actually was running Server 2008 on actually this laptop that you're seeing right here. And I really like to run Server because something's in the timing, it just seems faster than just like running Vista, mostly because, a lot of stuff is stripped out, from the client. And so I like that speed. I like being able to have the same stuff that's on the server because if I need to help, an admin configure IIS for like WAS setup or something like that, it just makes it so much easier so I can screenshot it and, send over. You guys going to help us out to kind of help that story a little bit? So like, for example, I had to switch off, Michael, because I couldn't run the Zune software on the Server 2008.
Zune 3 software, yes.
Zune 3 software. Now, there is a little hack to do it. You can during the installation, you can unzip it, and then you grab the MSI, but it's still a little weird. There were some other pieces of software, like some of the live services tools. They don't work very well and whatever. So I had everything set up great, but I ultimately had to go over. Like sidebar, for example, isn't in there. Just a few things. Can you help me out just a little?
Well, no, I think really you should be focusing now on Windows 7 client. I think that's that.
Oh, wow.
I do too. I mean, looking at it, it just looks, we'll have to dig in and see what it looks like underneath the nice interface updates, but it does look good. So
yeah, but then I'm back to, this doesn't work, that's not compatible, that's not compatible. I'm talking about, like, today.
So. Well, you can always run, Vista's a great, great platform, and you can always run Vista and then run, technologies such as Virtual Server or Virtual PC and run your Windows Server 08.
No, I do that, actually, yeah. That's pretty much everything.
And we do have developers then, and running Windows Server 08 server as their workstation. However, it is built as a server, so it's... things like Zune and live, some of the live stuff, yeah, you're going to run into problems every now and then. But
yeah.
But that's why we're putting so much effort into developing Windows 7 client for you, just to make sure that your experience is exactly the way that you want it.
Good political answer. Awesome.
So, Michael, I really appreciate you coming over to our table and sitting down with us and giving us some time. Thanks a lot. So, any final thoughts that you want to share with our listeners?
You've got all your build bits for M3 for Windows Client and Windows 7 Server, Windows Server 2008 R2, I should keep calling it. So, just have a play with those, really get to understand them, and, feedback as much as possible because your feedback drives the next iteration of our product. So, really have fun, and I'll see you at PDC next year.
Awesome. We have to ask, as we always do, what's your favorite deep-fried food?
A crab. the soft shell crab.
Soft shell crab?
Oh, yeah.
That's a unique
answer. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. Wow.
Fried
wow.
crab.
Yep.
Is that nice. An Australian thing, or is that something...
We don't have crab in the South. I mean, we're...
I have no idea, but my auntie owns a soft shell crab farm, so that's probably why I why I like it so much.
No, I love crab, so that's great.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's the most original one that we've
had. That's the most original one we've had.
That we've had
crab.
So far. So
I mean, anything.
Most people
anything
say
deep fried tastes good, right?
That's exactly. Well, Michael, we certainly appreciate you coming on the show and joining us. We will see you next year at PDC, I am sure. We appreciate your time and appreciate all the info on R2. Well, folks, that wraps up another episode. Woody, it was great hanging out with you again.
Oh, you know what? I'm loving all 4 days with you this week.
I know, man. Well, it's like we're married this week almost. It's everybody's like, you guys are always together. And I'm like, well,
we're an old married couple.
It's an old married couple walking around the show and stuff. Well, folks, we thank you for tuning in. You can always reach us at comments@deepfriedbikes.com. You can also reach us on Twitter/deepfriedbikes. If you have any comments or questions, queries, or posers, you can send us out there. Until next time, folks, keep your tea glasses full and your axes sharp. We'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.